Advisement. We'll go to the fourth case of the day, Tibbs versus the City of Chicago. It's appeal number
05-1634. Good morning, Your Honor. If it pleases the court, my name is John Sudeikis, and I represent the appellant, Ronald Tibbs. We request that this court reverse the summary judgment for the defendants for the reasons set forth in our brief. Today, I just want to address the issue of false arrest and imprisonment, and I will rely on the brief for our other arguments. The facts are relatively undisputed. This is a case where an innocent, middle-aged African-American male with a different name, a different birth date, a different address, different height, different weight, was wrongfully arrested. He was wrongfully arrested for an outstanding traffic warrant that was issued purportedly 11 years ago, all the while protesting his innocence. No inquiry was made as to whether or not he was the wrong person, even though he protested this to the officers.
It must be just terrible timing. They have to argue a case for 2 days incarceration after the last fellow had 27 years. It's a difficult situation.
I hope you, in the brief, Your Honor, you will recognize that as well when you write your opinion.
I'm not sure who will write the opinion. Somebody will. But they make mistakes. Sometimes they make mistakes.
Your Honor, I understand that. And I know that police officers are in a difficult decision out on the street. But let's look at what's in the record here is the warrants. You have two people whose names, Tibbs, perhaps is a popular name. There's a six-year difference in their birth dates. The arrest warrant that was issued 11 years ago was purportedly for a revoked or suspended driver's license. So I think we can imply from that the person had a driver's license at that time and that there was information that the officers had. The arrest warrant that's in the record states that he's 155 pounds, 6 feet tall, born 1949. My client, who was wrongfully arrested, is 5 feet 7 inches tall, 190 pounds, and was born in 1955.
Do you think the situation here is more egregious than it was in this Brown case that our court decided in 1987?
I don't know, Your Honor.
And that guy was arrested more than once.
He was, Your Honor, and perhaps now, I don't know why we need to hold the City of Chicago to the lowest possible standard of care. Why is it that I can go and I can order a vacuum, which I did on Amazon.com, and I can track it almost to my door by the minute, but the officers can look in a computer system, see the same last name, and say, oh, it's close enough. Let's throw him in jail. We don't have time to look into this. Let's let the judge look at it. Your Honor, I know a lot of people who can gain 45 pounds in 11 years. I don't know too many who can lose it. But what bothers you here is, do you know a person who can grow 5 inches in 11 years? Would that not give you a suspicion? My client's 5'7". The arrest warrant is issued for a person who's 6 feet tall. I don't know of anybody who can grow 5 inches in 11 years. And this person all the while is protesting his innocence. The only thing they have on him is a similar name. If we're going to allow the city off the hook on this, Your Honor, you have a surname, which I guarantee if we were to look into some sort of database for warrants, you would find a surname of Evans, wouldn't we?
Well, the last case was Evans with 27 years in prison.
And I think we would find a surname of Williams. I mean, I have a name, X-Y-D-A-K-I.
You've got a great last name.
I know. I would never get arrested on a false arrest. But but I've been cursed with this name, but I guess that's the one out that looks good for me.
It's a beautiful last name, and you've got this advantage of...
But, Your Honor,
nobody else in the phone book with your last name.
But they just said, why couldn't you just look in the phone book for a Ronald Tibbs then? Go pick somebody up at his house and say, look, we made a reasonable mistake. He was here
but
in the
Judge
phone book.
Judge Boysman did it in the Brown case, looked in the phone book and saw all the people that had that same name in the book.
Your Honor, it's incumbent upon you to overturn Judge Posner at this time.
Okay, that's the question. Do we have to overrule that authority, that decision?
I don't know, Your Honor. I mean, these are fact-specific questions, and Baker, of course, puts up a roadblock to these sorts of claims. But what they say is, look, it's a fact-specific case. If there's a genuine issue of material fact as to whether or not the officer knew that this person was the wrong person, that's a triable issue for the jury. We can't decide that. This person protested his innocence. There's enough there in the record to indicate that this was the wrong person to the officer. It goes to the jury. This isn't a case for summary judgment. Let the jury decide the credibility of the witnesses at this time. And, Your Honor, the cases that you cite, these are cases that have taken place, I know, 15, 10, 20 years ago. Why is it that everything else that has changed over the years, we still allow the city of Chicago to simply say, you had the similar last name to somebody, that's enough for us to falsely arrest you? Times have changed. There needs to be some sort of mechanism in place where they can make sure that they have the right person. A common surname shouldn't be enough to put this person in prison.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. Is it your view that the right procedure would be to make that determination right on the street before somebody's taken into custody, or what?
I think if there's enough exculpatory evidence from the street, especially for an arrest warrant for a traffic violation, then that person should not be detained. If it's a felony, depending on the gravity of the crime, more stringent procedures, of course, may need to be taken. But when you have a case where the birth date and everything else is wrong, and it states in the warrant that my client had valid identification on him, he had a valid driver's license, the warrant that was issued 11 years ago, I think you can imply that this person had a driver's license too, where they don't match up other than the surnames. And when there's this gross disparity in these people's heights, it has to give a these people pause. And if they're not going to make the decision on the spot, then they need to take them into some sort of area, district, place, check on the computer, either through fingerprints, photo identification, or some other things. Why is it that they have to be brought into court and have a judge determine that these people aren't the right person? Do you think that the judges have before them any more information at that time than the officer does? I don't really think they do. I think they just look at the old arrest warrant and look at this person, and they say, you know, it doesn't match, and throw it out at that point. But
you're into your rebuttal.
I will reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Norberg.
Thank you, Judge Evans. May it please the court. Mr. Tibbs' false arrest claim arises under the Fourth Amendment, and the standard for analyzing these types of cases under the Fourth Amendment is objective reasonableness. So to determine...
What if you had an arrest warrant for Charles Smith, and there's 1,000 Charles Smiths that live in Chicago? You stop somebody and you check, well, there's an arrest warrant for Charles Smith. This person says he's Charles Smith. Is that probable cause to arrest and take him into custody?
Well, reasonableness obviously is going to depend on the exact facts of the case, and perhaps a more common name such as Smith might play a role to some extent in determining whether or not it was objectively reasonable for the officer to make that arrest.
Well, would it be in the hypothetical I just posed to you?
I would say our position would be that yes, that would still be a valid arrest, because
just as long as you have an arrest warrant for Charles Smith and you find a Charles Smith, and that's enough.
Yes, because as long as the I suppose there might be generally there are other indicia involved. In this case, there was.
Well, my example, there's nothing else. You stop somebody, his name is Charles Smith, and you check, and there's a arrest warrant for somebody named Charles Smith.
Well, I guess that I'm willing to concede that perhaps the reasonableness calculus in that case might lead to another result, but that isn't this case, as I'm sure.
Well, know. What if you have Charles Smith, and the birth date is within 10 years?
That would suggest that would
should
put
they
a
check further.
On the street, the considerations that officers face are, you can only look at what the officer knows at the time. In that situation, you would know you were looking for, you had a warrant for someone named Charles Smith who had a certain age. and you had an identification, I'm presuming, from the suspect that showed that the age was similar. In that case, it would be a lot closer as to whether or not that was reasonable or unreasonable.
Mr. Zedekas makes a nice suggestion here, I think, about looking at what the underlying warrant's for. If it, you know, it's a murder case, maybe that's you'd want to err on the side of arresting the person, but if it's a traffic ticket, maybe not.
I mean, as a policy matter, that is conceivably there's a very good argument for maybe making that sort of policy. But as a constitutional matter, in light of the case law that this court has already referred to, the Johnson, Brown, and Patton cases, it's clear that at the very least, Officer Koister in this case cannot be expected to have done anything else, and cannot be expected to have understood it to be unreasonable to arrest Mr. Tibbs in this
situation. Here you have about a six-year difference in ages,
about
different middle initials. The height is a significant difference.
To take the last point first, the evidence of the height, there's no evidence in the record. And it's important to note that Mr. Tibbs in this case really adduced no evidence at the summary judgment stage, essentially relying on his allegations, even on appeal. All of this factual citations are to the complaint. So there really is no evidence adduced with regard to the officers having knowledge of this height difference, for example. The only evidence that's clear in the record is that the officers got an identification that showed that there was a Ronald Tibbs who was an African-American and who had an outstanding warrant and who had a birthday that showed up on the computer in the squad roll that was 6 years different. But there's also evidence, and no countervailing evidence in the record, that Officer Koister was aware that sometimes there were mistakes entering birthdays, for example. So it was perfectly reasonable, given the fact that there were these three important elements, the first, the last name, and the race, that it was perfectly reasonable for him to assume that he had a valid arrest and could make a valid arrest at that point.
Well, what was on the face of the warrant? Did he have the warrant?
He didn't have the warrant with him. What happens in this sort of situation?
It's on the computer.
Exactly. He gets an identification, goes back to the computer. Computer gives you limited information, doesn't give you it's not as though you get a PDF of the warrant on a screen of some sort. You just get limited information.
And do we know what that information was?
Well, on the record, the only information that he had was the name, middle initial, and the birth date.
Okay. So we don't have any physical description.
No, there is no physical description. The evidence in the record does not bear out that there was any physical description available on the street on the site. The allegations in the complaint allege that there was a difference in physical description and that Mr. Tibbs pointed that out to Officer Koistra and his fellow officers. But there is no evidence to that effect in the summary judgment record.
And is that still the type of printout today that officers have available to them? I mean, I assume it would just add one more line to provide the physical description so things like this could be avoided.
That may very well be true. I'm not exactly certain what it's always evolving, I imagine, the capabilities of technological capabilities. I'm not, to be frank, exactly certain what the status quo is right now with what kind of information they get.
But you agree that would certainly be a good step.
I think that there are very strong arguments policy-wise as to why that might be a good step. But with regard to the constitutionality of this particular stop, it's clear that given the information that the record reveals was available to the officers, that it was completely reasonable to believe that they could make this arrest.
And then you would say that there's no factor that would, in terms of the nature of the crime, that would put more of an obligation on the officers to check. You would say this same standard applies whether it's a traffic ticket, whether it's a violent crime. It doesn't matter.
Under the law, as it's been developed, that is the case. Now, as a matter of my own personal preference or as a policy matter, I might be able to get into a discussion about that. But the fact is that a valid arrest is a valid arrest, whether it's based on an outstanding warrant for something as minor as traffic, an 11-year-old traffic problem, or if it's based on probable cause that it's not a warrant-based probable cause. A good arrest is a good arrest. Now, as a policy matter, perhaps it would make sense to say you can be a little bit less careful about how much probable cause there is when making an arrest for a warrant that is for a serious felony, perhaps. But on the law as it stood that night and on the law as it stands now in this circuit, is probable cause for an arrest is not a matter of gradation.
Well, okay, but they took him to the station, and then they checked for more information. He's saying, this isn't me. I'm not the Ronald, whatever, middle initial Tibbs with this date of birth that you're looking for. It's somebody else. I'm innocent. I'm not the guy. So at the station, what do?
At the station?
They check more information. They fingerprinted him. Why couldn't it be discovered quickly that he's not the right person?
Well, first of all, the record is not clear, and there's no real evidence in the record. And once again, the citations are to the complaint with regard to how often and whether at all Mr. Tibbs made these representations that this wasn't me. But even assuming he did, when they got back to the station, Officer Koistra made a call to the warrants division to check on the validity of the warrant, to make sure the warrant was still active. And he received the response, yes, the warrant is still active. He didn't receive any additional information at that time. He didn't receive additional information with regard to these physical descriptions, et cetera. So, and under McCollin, I think that as Mr. Zudakis recognized, he has a problem because there's no responsibility for an officer to undertake further investigation at that point. Now, in McCollin, they recognized maybe at some point during a detention, what would be a due process claim would ultimately sort of ripen. But within the first definitely 3 days in McCollin, and definitely the day and a half or to 2 days that was involved in this case, there is no additional responsibility for the officer to make further investigation into that. So the record in this case, to answer your question, Judge Evans, shows that he did do further investigation, but it was limited to the question of the viability and the activeness of the warrant. So he did not come into further information. Had he come into further information at that time, there is case law in this circuit that obviously, and it certainly makes sense, that if you determine that you have the wrong person in custody, you can't continue to hold them. But that's not this case. In this case, until the point when Mr. Tibbs appeared at his hearing after bonding out and it became clear and this became sorted out that he was the wrong person, that is when everybody learned that the wrong person had been arrested. So in this this is not a situation where someone was being held in violation of the due process clause with knowledge that they had the wrong person.
What was the traffic violation on the warrant?
It's not clear in the record exactly what it was, what the specific violation was.
So that information doesn't come up on the squad computer or the computer at the station?
Not according to the record in this case. The record is clear that it certainly didn't come up in the squad role, that they did not have that information on the street.
It just shows a traffic warrant, no other specific information about what sort of violation?
My understanding is that that's right. So we'll ask the court today to affirm the summary judgment for the city. Thank you.
This is probably in the record someplace, but what did your client use to identify himself?
He used his driver's license.
And a valid driver's license.
It's a valid driver's license. The warrants are in the record as Exhibit D. The warrant that was issued for the wrong person.
The warrant or the printout from the warrant?
I believe the arrest warrant is there. I believe that is there.
We don't have the Judge Sykes' questions about what was actually shown to the police officers. What did they see? We don't have that.
I believe Officer Koistra just testified that it came up as an arrest warrant that was 11 years old on his screen, and that's all that did it. But Your Honor, how do you exculpate yourself then if you're the wrong person? How do you do it? How does he show at any point before he gets thrown in jail that this is the wrong Ronald Tibbs? There's no way. And that's what they're saying. You have to wait until you're thrown in jail, bond yourself out, and show up in court.
That's what happens in every extradition case. The only defense to an extradition is I'm not the person named in the warrant. Sometimes you get held in custody for 30 days until there's a hearing and
Your Honor, I would hope that there's a different...
prove that you are the person named in the warrant.
I would hope that we would have a different standard, especially for an 11-year-old traffic warrant that has been issued. Is that what we really want? And a lot of these people, like my client, don't have money to bond themselves out readily available. He has to go and get processed into jail and processed back out.
You have good facts here. They're interesting facts. But then how do we fashion a rule here? You're saying an 11-year warrant, that's good for you. But what if it was a six-month-old warrant? I mean, you could have the same problem.
I would say that it is very difficult to fashion a bright-line rule because every case, of course, is different facts. Is this person from out of state? What was the serious nature of his crime? Does he have a prior history? What information does the officer have available? There needs to be some sort of sliding scale. Otherwise, you could take a name like Tibbs, look in the phone book, show up at a person's house and say, here, you're Ronald Tibbs, I got a warrant for you, and put this person in jail, couldn't you? I mean, an officer would have reasonable cause. It was in the phone book. We can't allow those sort of things to happen. This is a case where the person protests his innocence. There's a 6-year age difference here. There's a height difference. If you looked in the record, too, the arrest warrant...
Let me go back. In terms of that height difference, that came out at the police station, right? That wasn't something the officers had available at the time of the arrest.
Mr. Officer Koistra, in his deposition, did not seem to know what information was available on his screen. But, Your Honor, if I have an arrest warrant and I come to Your Honors or somebody else and I want it signed, I need to do that with particularity, don't I? Why does the city of Chicago not need to have some sort of particularity in the warrants, outstanding warrants that are issued? Is a birth date too much? Is the height of a person too much? Physical characteristics, something? We could pick up any person then whose name is Williams who had a 10-year age difference and we would have probable cause then, wouldn't we? Or Evans. That's not the way it should work. People with common surnames shouldn't be prosecuted and brought into prison simply because they have common names. This is somebody who is supposedly in a suspicious area. The facts of this case are they couldn't even produce the report why this person was detained in the first place. He's walking to go come back to visit his son, and he's picked up and stopped and arrested. And they just happen to find somebody with the name Tibbs with an 11-year-old arrest warrant out there. Oh, you're the man. That sounds a little fishy to me, too. I think the least that this court should fashion, if we're allowing these officers to depend on some sort of qualified immunity, is some sort of diligence standard. Did you act diligently? Was there information in the record that would lead a reasonable person to investigate further? What is the nature of the crime? Was it serious? Did you really need to arrest this person and throw him in jail? Do you really not think that if they were to issue a ticket for Mr. Tibbs to show up and he had a valid identification on him, he wouldn't have shown up to court? Do you really need to imprison somebody for that and let the judge make the determination? Can't we have a system out there that says the officers, when they look at an outstanding warrant, those warrants have to be described with particularity? No, you can't make a simple mistake on a last name and put a person in jail. We have people that can encode accurately. We can have people that can check people encoding these things. Is it too much to ask for to have the right height there, to have the right weight? This person lived in California, the wrong person. No wonder he didn't show up. If I'm an officer, wouldn't I not say, well, of course the guy didn't show up for his warrant. He lived in California. He's not going to show up for a traffic citation in Illinois.
Your time is up, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Actually, Mr. Norbert, your time is up, too, but I just wanted to ask you if you know whether the city has any policy of cleansing old traffic warrants out of the system after a certain period of time.
I do not know that, Judge Evans. I apologize. I don't have information.
Would you mind checking into that and filing a supplemental Rule 28 letter with us? Just interested in how long a traffic warrant sits out there before anybody's arrested on it.
I'd be glad to. Okay. Limited to the issue of how long traffic warrants or how long warrants
just,
in general?
Yeah, just keep it at traffic warrants.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you would do that within a week or so, it would be very helpful to us.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, this case is under